Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast. As usual, I'm James Rushton, joined by Danny Raza. How are you getting on, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing well, mate. Thanks for asking. It's actually a pretty mild evening in Manchester today. As we speak, Chelsea are getting thrashed 4-0 by Manchester City at halftime. So I don't really know if I want to venture out into Manchester later today. Wow, what a game for Villa earlier this week. I don't think Chelsea will replicate what Villa managed to do. 3-0 down, James.
Crazy, man. So Villa played Sheffield United on Friday night on Sky Sports. It was a mixed game, to say the least. I think that's probably the best way of describing it. A lot of people hammering Villa, I think rightly so. But 3-3, mate. Villa's goals, all three of them coming in within the last 10 minutes of the game after being 3-0 down. For 82 minutes, they were hammered. Not that they were particularly bad, but they made mistakes and Sheffield United really forced the game on Villa. A lot has been said. What is your kind of summary of
summary?
That match? Yeah.
God, I mean, it was 80 minutes. It was awful. Sorry. Let me pass a judgment that I'm allowed to pass. For 70 minutes, it was awful, at least.
So why are we stopping at 70 minutes?
Because I was watching the game alone in a pub up in Manchester, an unnamed pub, and I was just watching us get thrashed. Funnily enough, I was the only Villa fan there. I was hearing Rita Aurora and the Backstreet Boys being blasted off all around me, and it almost felt like it was some sort of bad dream that I was going through. People in their white shirts and their going out dresses. You know, it's an evening game. It's 8 or 9 o'clock. And it gets to 70 minutes and we're 3-0 down. And I just think, you know what? There's really no point in me staying here, is there? I'm just going to get up. As soon as I heard the Backstreet Boys come on, I was out of there. I did not want to endure it any longer. But for those 70 minutes, what I will say is it didn't look like Villa were making any sort of attempt to score. It's not to say they didn't try. It just looked like our attack was totally flat. I saw Alan Hutton try and curl one in from 30 yards out on his left peg. Immediately, my thought was, you are the Scottish Cafu. You're not Roberto Carlos. And it was those sorts of chances Villa almost attempted to replicate all throughout the game.
Yeah, it was a mad one. And look, I'll say, mate, you're justified for leaving. You're in a bar. You're watching the game on your own. There's no Villa fans. You're listening. There's music being blasted. It's late. It's getting late as well. At 70 minutes, it must be pushing 9 past 9 there. I think you're completely justified in leaving that pub. Because it sounds to me like one of the dream sequences from The Sopranos or Twin Peaks. It's like an awful dream sequence. But it did. It was a nightmare, and it did turn out to be a bit less of a nightmare by the end of the match. If you left the game, you'd have missed probably an all-time Villa comeback. 3-3, first goal, Tyrone Mings comes up with a big header and scores. The second one, Tommy, it's a set-piece routine. Alfie hits it and the keeper palms it away into the path of Abraham. Perfect stuff. The third one, Andre Green, comes up big with a header after John McGinn's stolen the ball in the box and crossed in. So Villa really, really did well. I don't think we can take that away from them. A lot of people saying they left it too late, but man, that's football, isn't it?
Hometown hero, Andre Green. Hometown hero. Yes. It was nice to see, especially a player who's just been recalled from loan because of his performances and because it's something that could excite the fans. He almost did something that we might expect from Jack Grealish, that sort of passion to stay in there late on. And you have to say about Andre Green, that header in particular, he's tall, man. For a winger, he's tall. So it was a pleasure to see him bang one, and you almost wondered where that spark was for the rest of the game. But as you say, mate, three goals in the last 10 minutes. I've seen them all, and you know what? Sheffield United probably could have done a lot better, but it's good to see that we actually managed to create those chances so late on. Because, well, you know, if you wanna get anywhere in the Championship, you can't be down and out until the final minute.
No, and Villa proved that, you know, last kick of the game, and they've come back into a game, which they had no right to come in, even at 3-1 or 3-2. It was still always going to be a big ask to score one, let alone two, let alone three goals. And look, a lot of criticism goes towards Villa and how they didn't how they played or didn't play. But Sheffield United, that perform in my eyes, that 10-minute spell from them was worse than anything Villa put out. Anything. To score three, to concede three over 80 minutes is one thing. To concede three in 10 minutes is another.
Yeah, no, conceding three in 10 minutes is awful.
The thing with that is, they folded so badly after Tyrone Mings scored that header. They completely collapsed. Any tactical instruction went out the window, and Villa have picked up a lot of flack for the performance up to that point. But if I was a Sheffield United fan, you don't lose a game. You don't lose the lead when you're 3-0 up.
That there was nerves. That there was nerves. Sheffield United are, I think they would have gone top of the table with that win.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think it probably got to them at that point. They were 3-0 up against a big side. You know, let's cut it, right? Let's be real here. Villa is always the scalp. No matter how many seasons we have to finish like mid-table or whatever in the championship, I know we finished third last season, but like we're very, very much mid-table this season, we're always a scalp. Villa are always a scalp. And I think it got to Sheffield United at that point thinking, we don't know how to see things out at this stage. You know, it's almost them being at the top of the table and thinking, right, what do we do now? And they looked confused. And Villa, I mean, how could you not be? Especially if Villa have been so sort of, you know, the total opposite of being poignant. Like, they just weren't there all game. And then to suddenly be sparking some sort of an attack on Sheffield United, it just had them against the ropes somehow, and I don't know how. It was like Tyson Fury in the 12th round. I don't know how Villa managed to salvage that.
It's a really odd one. It's a really odd one because it's not like Villa dramatically improved. They'd been doing the same things all game. They just got a bit more tempo. And I think a big reason for that is Glenn Whelan coming on because he was playing first-time passes. Don't get me wrong, he was still playing the long ball, like Mille Jedinak. But he was able to kind of support the attack, create overloads, and pass the ball a lot quicker. It's like he had it envisioned in his head where he wanted it to go. And Glenn Whelan, fantastic coming on and doing that. It's just disappointing that I know it letting those three goals in, and it comes back to the criticism. It goes in a full circle like that. But I'm really struggling to sum it up because how can you criticize the team for coming back like that?
Oh, I mean,
can you?
They salvaged it, but they shouldn't have left it that late. We should never have been 3-0 down. It should never have been. You know, and look, as much as this is a three-goal comeback, as much as that is what it is, right, and it should be celebrated, it's another draw. It's another draw. And Villa should be, and, you know, we can say this as many times as we want, with that attack, Villa should be winning games. I don't care if it's Sheffield United. You know, even if it is teams near the top of the table, we need to be threatening to win that game. The fact of the matter is, there was at no point during that game where Sheffield United thought, you know what, we might lose this. At no point.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just flip it on the head just a moment. It is totally irresponsible for a side who recently have been 3-0 down to Swansea, been 3-0 down to Wigan, to then come to that same point against another championship side. Because that's something that should have been ironed out by now.
I think Villa got some squad struggles, don't they? It's
what squad struggles? What squad struggles?
I think it's completely unbalanced in ways that we can't necessarily see. I think we have a problem at defensive midfield. That is a massive issue, a huge issue for us. We are completely based around Jack Grealish, 100% based around. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a question that Dean Smith probably hasn't had the time to get to grips with the squad he wants, because that's the first time he's seen Mille Jedinak start. No, in all his time, that's the first time he's seen that man start. So there's still players who haven't really impressed on it. Codger's another one. There's players that played for Steve Bruce and aren't playing anymore. They aren't impressing. Jonathan Codger's a massive one, actually. Look at the output he had, and now there's nothing. There's absolutely...
Doesn't matter. I mean, even up front, Jonathan Codger is one of those players who the ball sort of sticks to his feet, and when he's greedy, he can sometimes come off, and he can go on long spells playing well, but that he's nowhere near sort of generous enough, almost, or he hasn't got the sort of crossing ability or the assist creating ability from the wing, I don't think, to be a top championship winger. He's better off up front, which begs the question, you know, who's going to be playing on that left wing for us? Is it going to be Jonathan Codger? And if it is Jonathan Codger, who's our backup striker? I mean, they're all questions, I guess. Like, we probably should have ironed things out a little bit better in January. And we've all seen that we play better with, you know, a player in behind the striker who has been Jack Grealish. But if we play better like that, and we play better with the number 10 in the system, why are we overloaded in defensive midfield and underloaded, if that's the word?
Mm-hmm.
undersubscribed in that number 10 position, in that attacking midfield position, where Villa looked brutal under Smith when he first came in.
Well, Villa lack right now. They lack anyone convincing at defensive midfield and in attacking midfield, which is a big problem, because you've got kind of a midfield made out of the three similar type of players in Conor Hourihan and John McGinn. And back in the day, Glenn Whelan was in that position. Now he's moved further back to be the defensive midfielder. But you've got three kind of players who share that same DNA spread across the midfield, and it's causing a lot of problems.
I'd be tempted to maybe, you know, bring in Tom Carroll, play him in alongside one of Hourihan and McGinn or Whelan if you really wanted to. And maybe put Conor Hourihan or John McGinn behind the striker. I mean, maybe it would bring out a different John McGinn. I know we like to see him as a box-to-box midfielder, but perhaps, you know, when we're not doing so well in attack, and it's clear that Tammy Abraham needs somebody to bounce off, we should probably be trying somebody like Hourihan and McGinn out in that number 10 position, because they could play there. They've done well there before. Hourihan's able to score goals and create assists. You know, I think maybe that would be an experiment worth trying.
So the Sheffield United game, I know we pressed for time today, so I'm going to wrap it up and I'm going to ask for your match ball. I need your man of the match, or the man who pressed you the most. Anything?
Mm-hmm.
Who stood out for you?
Oh gosh, I mean, tell you what, Tyrone Mings's header was good, but I can't give it to any of the defenders, I don't think. I think it has to be Andre Green, just for that last minute equaliser. I got to give it to him.
I think I'm going to go for Glenn Whelan, because he was able to change the tempo when he came on. Mm-hmm. And I think he gave a little bit more than Mille Yedinak, and it was pretty much a catalyst for us coming back into the game, was his mobility. And that sounds incredibly surprising, but he was a lot more mobile. Yeah, sure. Than Yedinak, able to play the ball first time, one-touch football. And it's when Villa play with Glenn Whelan, and Glenn Whelan is playing well, they actually look like the type of team that wants to take on Dean Smith's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't, they look like that Steve Bruce team.
Sure.
I think there's a massive difference between Whelan playing and Whelan being on form, and us having Yedinak, who probably isn't actually fit at all. We've got to come together for one. I think Tyrone Mings will be a good shout, but what are you thinking?
I mean, I don't blame bad defending on him.
I don't think it was that bad defending, though. It was more so Villa giving the ball away in midfield and just getting... You can't stop that.
The second goal shouldn't have been allowed, probably.
Yeah, that's bollocks. That's not enough, though, is it?
No. Because if we're being honest...
That second goal was kicked through his fucking hands, weren't it?
It was, and Kalinic's head could have been, you know, basically, could have been hurt, you know, if it was an inch off.
Are we talking about stamps on heads again? The second.
No, let's not go into it again. Let's not. But yeah, I mean, it was dangerous. It was dangerous from Billy Sharp. But I guess if you're a Sheffield United fan, you probably view it a little bit differently. What about Tammy Abraham for being there? You know, for that second goal. Or Anwar El Ghazi for the cross.
Yeah, but the thing with Tammy Abraham, and I'm not going to dig him out on this, but Villa's the first Sheffield United goal that Villa conceded, He blocked it off the line when he was in the net.
Yeah, he did.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, why are you going to defend that? Why are you going to defend the ball in the back of the net? When you touch it, it's already a goal. So there's a bit of me that doesn't want to give it to Tammy.
All right, let's give it to Mingzi for basically the header that brought Villa back into it.
He led by example as well. And I think it's not just Glenn Whelan coming on, because you still had nine or so of the same players, eight of the same players on that pitch, yeah, who had been on the pitch conceding three goals. And I think a lot has been taken away from their effort. They improved and stepped up to the plate when they needed to. And I think Alfick and Mings did that a lot. McGinn and Hourihane just were different, completely different players when Whelan was on the pitch. McGinn and Hourihane both especially, actually, because they were misplaced. A lot has been made of Conor Hourihane misplacing passes, but McGinn was doing it as well. No, they weren't at it, and probably Hourihane more so than McGinn. But when Whelan came on, he changed the game, and that's why he got my match ball. But I think you have to look at that whole team and how they stepped up, and Tyrone Mings is a great example of that. Never say die, and that's brilliant. A lot has been made of the character of the team. And I think they showed a lot of it, a huge amount of it. And I'd be really proud of that. I wouldn't be proud of necessarily conceding three, but managing to step up and salvage a point out of that. That whole team should be proud of that. Not necessarily conceding three, but stepping up and saving something. Magical, yeah, almost.
Just for it being a good moment. Just for it being good news, man.
Good news.
I was ecstatic when I saw it. I was just surprised. I was just like, wow, okay then. You know? I actually was so mad and so angry when Villa were 3-0 down. I went to go and watch some music, right? Like some live music. I just walked into a bar on my own, paid a fiver ticket kind of thing. And then like 30 minutes into it, I just see my phone blowing up with tweets of people just kind of being like, smiley faces and stuff. You know, sarcastic ones. A couple from you as well, James. And walk no, outside.
I'm
and I'm, and I'm,
I was digging you
out. Oh, it's all right. I deserve to be dug out there. And I just walked outside and I just fist bumped and shouted really loud in the air when I saw Anwar El Ghazi's face on a GIF. Villa having just equalised. Fair enough.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm really happy. I think we take it. A lot of people have been digging out Villa over the weekend. Tammy Abraham's tweeted, if you left early, you missed a comeback, with a kiss emoji. And people were like, you would have left at 3-0. And there's a lot of people trying to justify why they left. And I don't care, man. If you left, you left. That's your business. And we don't need to justify. I don't think anyone needs to justify it. But a lot of people are going to great lengths to justify why they weren't there. And I think it's fair.
You don't have to justify it. If your team is 3-0 down, right, and they've shown you nothing, and let's be honest, Villa showed us nothing. They did show nothing up until the last 10 minutes. You're perfectly justified to get out there, miss the traffic, whatever. You know, that's it. Miss the traffic. Get home. Get home safe. You know, get out.
Coming all over. Yeah. Coming from all different directions. So get home. If you feel it, you don't need to justify it. You don't need to come out on Twitter and say, oh, this is why we're home. It's a part and parcel of football, isn't it, leaving early? But I would question, why are you spending that much money on watching bloody Villa if you don't like it?
If I'm at a game, I never leave early, but I can understand why you would.
I get those feelings. So we've got two games to preview, because we've got the midweek one and the West Brom one, so we'll fly through those. But first, mate, it looks like Jack Grealish could be in line for a role in one of these games, probably more so the Baggies one on the weekend, if at all. So if he comes back, who loses out in that midfield?
Whoever the defensive midfielder is.
Yeah, and you're going to push Hourihane back, you reckon?
Pretty much, yeah. I'd say it's pretty simple for me in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a simple question, actually, isn't it? Yeah. I thought he was losing out, yeah.
That's what was working before. So
yeah, whoever's there. I think they might even start Whelan over Hourihane.
I mean, that's the other option, isn't it? You could look at
Tom Carroll.
Carroll hasn't even had any games yet, has he? Maybe midweek.
He played 10 minutes against Reading, so he hasn't had a great deal of action. Wasn't on the bench at all against Sheffield United due to illness. So let's see if he might be in a role for one of these games, but I don't know. I really don't know what to make of that signing still.
I think he'll be all right, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see Grealish come in. Someone will lose out, but yeah.
It still was, you know, when you look at how everything panned out, he still probably was perhaps more of a backup option than perhaps something that we needed. So I don't see him necessarily improving the first 11, but we'll see.
So on to midweek, Villa actually go back to London. Well, Dean Smith goes back to London and they verse Brentford, a team which has been doing really, really well in spots since Dean Smith left. They had a bit of a bad run for a while, but it looks under Thomas Frank that it's all fine, but they won't probably end their season with any notion of success because they're still languishing in those you know, lower mid-table places. That doesn't mean they haven't been doing well. And I think they've been doing really well under Thomas Frank after Dean Smith left to, of course, join Villa. It's going to be a tough one for Dean Smith, I think.
Oh, I think it will. I think it will. I wonder if the occasion might get the better of him, especially since this is a Brentford team that he's built himself almost. And they're a Brentford side who are scoring goals for fun at the moment. Absolutely scoring goals for fun. I mean, you look at their last sort of 6 or 7 games, I think all bar the last Nottingham Forest game, they've scored more than 2 goals every game. And that's worrying when you look at Villa's defensive record. And
what's worrying for me, mate, is that this Brentford side that we're going to play look more complete. Like they look like they've got more of a defensive backbone than they did when Dean Smith was managing them. They were always quite attack heavy. And they've lost their best central defender, I think, Chris Mitchell. Moved to Bournemouth and they look even better without him. It's crazy. And I think I'm pretty scared.
What is it, Dalsgaard and Sorensen?
Yeah, and I think they've got Barbet. They've got a lot of options they can choose to kind of deploy across a back four, back three. Their defence looks solid. Their attack looks solid. They look like they're riding a high wave and they're moving forward again after kind of losing the manager that they thought might have taken them to the end of the season and maybe the playoffs. So they've had a roller coaster season, but they've been performing really well. And Brentford have always had us on a plate for the last few seasons. Especially when we visit their place, mate.
Oh, it's because they're a positive side. And I think if you go to Villa and you attack them, I mean, the world's your oyster. You know?
Yeah.
Villa are the sort of team where if you start getting scared of them because they're Aston Villa, because they're a big name. And that's one thing. But if, you know, Brentford, they are always that sort of like plucky underdog side, aren't they? And they always manage to do well against some of the bigger teams in the Championship. And I think, that's with all due respect, by the way, to them. They've done fantastically to get to where they are. And I'm sure they're going to continue because they have got such a fantastic young squad. I could almost see them going up to the Premier League and doing a Bournemouth in a couple of years' time. But a lot of that is testament to Dean Smith. You know, he did manage to build a very strong team there and he did manage to build a very strong attack. Not only that, but he turned them into a team where they were not necessarily reliant on the same people. You know, if players left, they were able to replace them. They were able to bring in other players. And he's shown himself actually in a weird sort of way that with him leaving, somebody else who's been in the coaching setup is able to step into his place or into his space and let things continue the way they were. And I think when we look at Brentford, you look at what you'd like Dean Smith to do at Villa, but on a higher level. So I think Brentford being a strong team, I think it's only something we can look at positively. And I think it will be a fun game.
Yeah, I think Aston Villa under Smith, I think next year, maybe the season after, will be a lot more focused on the attack. Brentford look a bit more complete under Thomas Frank. We'll probably end up pinching Thomas Frank if this doesn't work out well in the next few seasons. But I've got faith in us. I just think it's going to be a rough season and that doesn't end necessarily on Wednesday because I really do think we're going to be in for a tough time at Brentford. I really do think that because it always there's a narrative at play here now, not one that we necessarily wanted, but it's the fact that we've come in as a quote-unquote big club, pinched the quote-unquote small clubs manager, and they've not really been rocked that hard by it. And we have had a patchy season.
They'll be out to get Smith. They'll be out to get Smith. I think you're right. It's going to be a very tough game. And Brentford scoring a lot of goals at the moment. I'm hoping we're back to scoring ways, but let's be honest. All the goals that we did score against Sheffield United were scrappy. Very scrappy.
let's just hope we manage to find that same scrappiness against Brentford on Wednesday. I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be tough for me to predict much more than a defeat here. Genuinely, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I honestly think it might be a defeat, but I think a 1-1 draw is a more realistic result. I think it's easy to look at the challenge, but I think Villa probably have it in them to steal another draw.
Yeah, I'll go with a 1-1 draw.
Are we? We're gonna agree on this one.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think you're right. Let's be realistic rather than pessimistic.
I think it's better to look at the positives rather than predicting a defeat. I don't want to really get into the business of predicting defeats. But Villa have a tough match after the Brentford because West Brom come to town on Saturday. So they're visiting Villa Park. It's not on Sky Sports, so it's a 3 p.m. kickoff. It's a derby game. West Brom have kind of been on the up and up. They're not going to finish top two. They're going to probably secure a playoff place. Probably fourth or fifth place looks set for them, set in stone almost. So Darren Moore's been doing really well up there. I think they've had a few grumbles, but they've been probably done better than expected. They come down under a cloud last season. I think Darren managed to make it look a bit brighter towards the end. They almost look like they may have stayed up. But things look a bit more positive for West Brom. They lost Harvey Barnes, but they're still West Brom, and they've been playing decently all season. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, no, they've looked good recently. They've looked good recently, and their defense looks even more solid with the addition of Mason Holgate as well. So I mean, that's one of the big things that's added to it. That defense is strong, man. They are strong, and I think like that's. The one thing that I will sort of worry about, where will the goals come from? I really hope that Jack Grealish makes a difference in that game. And I think he might well be the big difference in it. Dwight Gayle as well. And Jay Rodriguez. That attack is just so poignant. They've been banging him in and they've been so consistent. This is what Villa have been missing. Whilst Villa have been reliant, like they have been incredibly reliant on Tammy Abraham all season. Unlike sort of last season where we were sort of where we had Lewis Grabber and Albert Adoma chipping in with goals from everywhere. You look at West Brom and they've got goals coming in from so many different directions. Matt Phillips as well has been chipping in as well. I just think they're a very strong side, and they're an improved side since January as well. And I think we should be worried about it. But look, it's a derby game and it's always tough. We should have got the better of them in the first fixture of the season. We all know what happened at the end of it.
Yeah.
Villa basically robbed of a couple of 3 points at the end due to a handball. But yeah, man, like Gareth Barry as well, always a bit of a factor, always plays well against us. Yeah, it's going to be a rough one. And I think Jack Grealish could be the telling factor at the end of it.
Your fingers crossed he's back and ready. I don't know if he'll jump straight into the first team. Hopefully he's on the bench for at least one of these two games. I really hope so, because we do miss him. And he'll be a massive factor against West Brom. And West Brom team are pretty dangerous in the tackle. They're very much a mirror of Villa. They haven't had as much bad luck as us, I don't think, in terms of maybe officiating. Definitely. They've definitely benefited because of bad officiating.
Oh, we can't go into that. That's a bit, yeah.
No, we're not going to go into that. We got away with one against Reading, I think. But they have benefited, and I don't think they've had our bad luck. They're pretty much a mirror, and I think we'd have probably been around those positions if we'd been a bit more consistent. Very similar teams, very similar playing styles, and again, it's another draw. I can't look past the draw.
The other thing with West Brom is they have a massive squad. Every single position, anybody gets hurt, they've got somebody to step in. When you look down that squad list, it's massive. Like, I mean, you think of some of the players that you don't even think are actually there, like Wes Houlihan.
Yeah.
You forget about the James Morrisons, the Hel Robson-Kanus. That you know, they've got players in there ready to step in when things aren't going well. I mean, they've strengthened their midfield as well with Stefan Johansson, and I think that's the thing with West Brom. They really are a solid side like that. You know, they really are built for the scrap of the Championship. They really are, and that's why they're such a strong shout for promotion. Having said that. They're not necessarily they're not necessarily the most convincing side either. I'd say that Norwich, Leeds, Sheffield United have all looked a little bit better than them. And to be fair, I know they've had Brighton to play in the cup, in the FA Cup, but they've looked a little bit rocky this last month or so. They haven't looked like they're finding it easy to score goals as of late, even if that does include a Premier League side in those fixtures. The 1-0 win over Stoke, fairly unconvincing, you'd say. They lost to Middlesbrough as well in the Championship before that. So I think West Brom will be coming into this game perhaps not as well prepared as they would have liked to have been.
Wicked. Well, I'm going to go for another 1-1 prediction. Boring, I know. To end the podcast, what is your prediction, mate?
I'm going to all. The draws between Villa and West Brom continue.
Yeah, it's not going to stop, is it? The battle that rages on unless they go up the season via the playoffs. But yeah, man, thank you for joining me. I hope you've all enjoyed listening. A bit of a fast one today. We're a bit pressed for time. But we'll be back after the West Bromwich Albion game versus Villa on Saturday. Well, we'll be airing on Sunday. So yeah, we'll see you then. And up the Villa. Goodbye.